All beyond was empty, lit by the same bluish glow, and the ground trembled again beneath her feet like the faint aftershocks of an earthquake as Kate surged up the stairs. There was too much noise. The sirens echoed through August's head even after they were shut off, and the command center was a wall of soldiers talking over the buzz of the emergency power, and the voices on the comms as reports came in and orders went out. Someone had attacked the transformers, the metal towers that routed power to the compound and the surrounding barracks. The metal towers located south of the FTF's buildings, far from the seam. In 6 months, the Maokai had never ventured that far, hadn't made a concerted strike, until now.
Squads 1 through 8 report to the power block, ordered Philip. 10 through 12 report to the seam, said Markon. 13 through 20 take the UVR strip, added Shia. 21 through 30 evacuate the barracks, instructed Bennett.
August was already moving toward the stairs, already issuing orders to his own squad. They had a plan for this. They had a plan for almost everything. But plans and realities were different things. Plans were crisp, clean, the stuff of paper and drill. And realities, August had learned, were always, always, always messy. Sorrow appeared, supporting Henry, who was white as a sheet and still coughing. This time he couldn't seem to stop. The cough became a retch and then a spasm, and Henry was fighting for air. And then Emily was there, calling for a medic, and Sorrow was pulling August away. We have work to do, brother. And August knew that they were right.
I'll be okay, gasped Henry. Go.
So August went, plunging down the stairs with Sorrow at his side. Leo's voice was a stream in the back of his head, a smooth and steady current of orders, and August let himself lean into the efficiency of his brother's thinking. He hit the ground floor, and for an instant he thought of going down instead of out, but Kate was safer in a locked room than up here, whether or not she would agree. Harris, Jackson, and Ani were already in formation by the main doors.
Alpha team!
They saluted him, Harris grinning as if they were on their way to a party. Harris was always happy about a fight. Ani looked grim but determined. Jackson looked like he'd been caught in the middle of a shower, his wet hair plastered back. A line of jeeps idled on the strip, their high beams up. The grid was only 3 blocks away, but with the power being diverted to the main facilities, it would be 3 blocks of solid black.
Let's go.
Kate took the stairs 2 at a time, trying to scrub the last of the dried blood from her face as she reached sub-level 1. The armory was an exercise in organized chaos. In the low light, soldiers bustled, suiting up while team leaders issued orders and subordinates talked around and under each other.
An attack on the central grid.
Transformers 1 through 4 are down.
So they'd gone after the power. Darkness was a dangerous thing in a place like Verity, which made power the most important resource, the only thing that kept the monsters at bay. Sloane was upping the stakes, bringing the fight to them.
The first wave is en route.
Some kind of explosive.
Was that what she'd felt?
Reports of Maokai on the scene.
Kate's mind reeled as she fell in with the current of soldiers. She was still dressed like an FTF, and the half-light of the emergency generators cast the same muted glow over everyone, erasing details and reducing the soldiers to shadows in FTF suits. The corridor was lined with armored vests and, not helmets exactly, more like modified sparring gear with visors that shielded the eyes and left the bottom half of the face exposed. They made her think of the wardens, of Liam's attempts to design a proper suit, something that would protect her. She was reaching for a vest when she realized this was her chance. She could take advantage of the chaos, suit up, and slip out. They knew about the sickness now, and when this was over, they'd probably throw her right back in that cell. She should run. But she thought of Ilsa, helping her at every turn, of August, almost certainly on his way to the grid. She could go. Or she could stay and fight. Show them she wasn't a monster. Someone pushed a gun into her hands and her blood sang, vision narrowing as her thumb slid over the safety.
Her finger drifted toward the trigger. Kate ejected the clip and holstered the weapon and ammo separately. She longed for her spikes, but settled for a baton coated in iron, a pair of knives, and an HUV beam, and followed the stream of FTFs up to the lobby, pulling her helmet on as she went. She knocked the visor down over her eyes and trailed the soldiers out, past the doors and onto the dim stretch that had, hours before, been a vivid line of light. Jeeps were peeling away toward the site of the attack, marked against the dark skyline by gray smoke and the flicker of fire. Her father's tower loomed in the opposite direction, a beacon of shadow. "Sloan," whispered the darkness in her head. He had the Chaos Eater, and the urge to go after them both sang through her like madness. But that's just what it was. Madness. Because she knew she couldn't kill them both. Not alone. Kate took off toward the last of the jeeps. The convoy tore a strip of light through the dark streets as it made its way to the transformer grid. Jackson at the wheel. August didn't have his violin, not when there were so many soldiers involved, and the absence felt wrong. He took a baton from the utility kit just to have something to hold, even though its surface made his skin prickle and his stomach turn. Jackson swore when they rounded the corner and the FTF central power structure came into sight. It was on fire. A blast had taken out a chunk of the transformers, the remnants hissing and sparking in the dark. The FTF set to guard the station lay scattered at the base of the nearest support building. Their bodies, what was left of them, twisted, broken. Corsi already swarming the remains. August leaped out of the jeep before it stopped, and Sorrow jumped down from the next with inhuman grace, flute knife out and ready. "Get the lights up," ordered August. The vehicles circled, spinning their high beams toward the wreckage, and the Corsi scattered as technicians hurried to isolate and resequence the remaining power. Severed lines hissed and skated across the ground, and one of the support buildings looked like it was about to collapse. And then it did. It took out another transformer as it crumbled, and a block away, a line of buildings went dark. Kate leaped down from the jeep and found a world on fire, the air electric and the whole block plunged into chaos. The FTFs were clearly used to fighting small battles, and so was she. But whatever was happening at the power station, it wasn't a fight. It was a set of dominoes being knocked down. But Kate's first thought wasn't about the power. It was about the number of FTF standing in the road. "We're exposed," she thought. She craned her neck, scanning the rooftops, and caught sight of a pair of burning red eyes right before a blast went off. Not on the transformers, but on the street. The ground shook violently, and nearby the pavement cracked and gave way, plunging a cluster of soldiers down into the dark. Shouts went up as another blast went off, and another, and another. All around her, the road was crumbling. Kate sprinted for cover, drawing her baton as the ground shuddered and split under her boots. She got her back to a wall just in time to see another section of the street collapse, swallowing two more soldiers. The blasts were coming from the tunnels below. "Get off the ground," she called, her voice lost in the fray before she remembered the comm hooked to her vest. She punched the button and shouted into the mic. A few of the soldiers straightened, but too many were still weaving through the wreckage, trying to help the wounded. Idiots. The night was filling with smoke and dust and debris, and Kate hauled herself a few rungs up a fire escape and squinted through the haze, searching for August. Instead, she saw a shock of silver hair moving through the fray. Sorrow. A massive blast rocked the night, and the Sunai staggered, covering their ears as the ground nearby split, cracks racing toward them along the street. Sorrow couldn't see them, but Kate could. She called out to the Sunai, and Sorrow's head shot up, eyes narrowing. "Move!" shouted Kate, an instant before the road beneath the Sunai gave way. Sorrow moved just in time, lunging out of the path. Kate climbed another rung, scanning the chaos. She saw August down the block, covered in dust and holding up a wounded FTF. At the same moment, he looked up and saw her, raising a hand just before the ground exploded at his feet. Chapter 3.
The world went white. One second, August was standing on the street, and the next, he was engulfed. He couldn't see, couldn't hear, couldn't feel anything but force of the explosion.
Is this what it feels like? He wondered. To be unmade?
But then he hit the ground. He landed hard, the fall knocking the air from his lungs. His head rang from the blast, his hearing swallowed by the high white noise. The world was dark around him, but at least the darkness seemed to be a shallow thing, somewhere in front of his eyes instead of behind them. High overhead there was a hole, and beyond that, the smoky night, the far-off haze of headlights. Judging by the vaulted ceiling, the long echo, and the metal bars beneath his back, he'd landed in a subway tunnel. The wounded FTF lay nearby, his body twisted unnaturally atop the rubble. When August tried to move, he realized he might not be hurt or broken, but he was stuck, one leg pinned beneath the concrete and rebar. Slowly, the tinny ringing in his ears subsided, and he could make out a different kind of noise. The steady rush of water. His chest tightened in panic, but the sound wasn't getting any closer. The subway. It was built over a river. When he shifted, bits of rubble tumbled down through the gaps in the floor and dropped the long way to the water below. August threw all his weight into freeing himself from the debris, but none of it yielded. The Corsi in the shadows snickered.
Sunai, stuck Sunai.
August looked around for something, anything to use as a lever, and as he scanned the tunnel, two burning red dots, like the ends of cigarettes, danced in the dark.
Alice.
Hello, August. There was something in her hand, a remote. She nudged an object with her foot and it rolled toward him, stopping against a chunk of concrete by his knee. It looked like a lopsided ball, a lumpy package all tied up with tape. It took him too long to realize what it was. Alice perched on the farthest piece of rubble and turned the detonator between her fingers.
How long can Sunai hold their breath?
August! Kate's voice echoed through the tunnel. She was above him, crouched at the edge of the hole, tying a cable to a piece of rebar.
No,
thought August.
Run!
But it was too late. Alice looked up. Her red eyes flared wide, and Kate stared back in shock. And August tried to say something, anything, just as the Malkai hit the remote. The blast went off and the ground gave way and he was falling again, still tangled up in the concrete and steel and taking half the subway floor down with him. And this time, the ground didn't stop his fall.
How long can Sunai hold their breath?
He hit the surface of the water and sank like a stone. Kate stared down at the Malkai, and for a strange, disorienting instant, she didn't, couldn't, grasp what she was seeing. It was like a reflection, distorted by smoke and shadow. And then she understood. She was staring at a ghost, a shade, a monster made in her own image. And it looked up at her and smiled just before the blast. The explosion rocked the tunnel, and Kate nearly lost her balance as August crashed into the river.
Sorrow!
She called out, grabbing the cable and leaping into the dark. The cord burned her palms as she descended too fast and hit the ground hard, rolling up with an HUV in one hand and the gun in the other. The shadows hissed around her, rebuffed by the beam of light and the metal tracery on her gear. A second later, Sorrow landed in a graceful crouch several feet away. No rope, nothing but 6 feet of long limbs and the inability to break on impact. All Kate said was, August. But Sorrow was already moving, fastening a cable to their belt as they dove through the jagged hole in the subway floor and into the shadowed water below. Kate swung her HUV around, cutting through the clouds of dust and the deeper shadows, but there was no sign of the Malkai. She set the light on the ground and drew the gun's clip from her belt just as something moved behind her. She heard the shift of rock on her good side, the tumble of rumble through slats, and turned. The Malkai stood waiting at the limit of the light, a nightmarish version of Kate herself, the shape right and the details all wrong. Red eyes instead of blue. White hair instead of blonde. The monster was thinner than Kate, gaunt in the way all Maokai were, but she looked like her. Distorted, an echo, just as Sloane had been an echo of Harker. Him and not him. Neither and both and something in between. Had her father felt the same disgust, looking at Sloane? Or had he seen only proof of his own power? The monster pursed its lips, her lips. And when she spoke, her voice had an echo of Sloane's melodic rise, but also an edge of grit. "Hello, Kate." Sorrow swung a wet arm out of the hole, and the Maokai glanced sideways. Kate didn't hesitate. She drove the clip into the gun, swung it up, and fired. It felt good, felt right. The shock of the recoil, the satisfying bang, 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 as she fired three quick rounds at the Maokai's chest. Kate had always been fast, but her shadow was faster, dodging out of the way before the first shot echoed through the tunnel. The Maokai spun with that horrible, monstrous grace and slammed a boot into Kate's chest. She hit the subway floor, all the wind rushing out of her lungs. The armor absorbed the worst of the blow, but it still left her breathless and wincing as she staggered to her feet. The Maokai was already gone, swallowed up by the tunnel's impenetrable dark. Nothing but a trail of laughter in her wake. Everything in Kate said run. Not away, but after. She made it one stride, two, before Sorrow dragged himself out of the pit, hauling August onto the subway floor. He coughed and retched, chest heaving. Kate crossed to his side. "August." "He'll be all right," said Sorrow, slicking back their hair.
"Easy for you to say,"
he gasped, spitting brackish water onto the ground. But as Kate knelt beside him, as she helped him to his feet, as they climbed back out of the tunnel, her gaze drifted again and again and again to the dark that had swallowed her shadow, wishing she had gone after it. Chapter 4. August sat on the hall floor, his ears still ringing from the blast. He had gone straight to the compound's infirmary, expecting to find Henry on one of the cots. Instead, he'd found the head of the FTF on his feet, seeing to the wounded as if he himself hadn't just collapsed. "He's stronger than he looks," Em had said. But August could hear the static in his father's chest, the tick of time slipping, its unsteady rhythm like a faulty clock. But Henry wouldn't look at him, and his hands were covered in a soldier's blood. So August left, leaned back against the wall outside, and let himself slide down until he was sitting on the floor. Water dripped from his hair, and every time he breathed, he felt the remains of the river in his lungs. "How long can Sunai hold their breath?" There had been a moment under the surface, before Sorrow reached him, when Leo's voice had surged to the front of his mind and told him to fall, to unleash that dark self, the one that slept within his skin. And he hadn't.
"The August I knew would rather die. You make it worth the pain. You don't let go."
His body had screamed, the pressure turning to pain in his lungs. He'd heard that drowning wasn't a bad way to die, that at some point it even became peaceful. But it hadn't been peaceful for him. Would he have given in if Sorrow hadn't come? The lights came back up, the emergency blue replaced by steady white, and August heard a nervous cheer go through the building. The technicians had contained the damage at the power station and rerouted what power they could back into the compound. But to do so, they'd had to cut the supply for most of the FTF structures. Beyond the front doors, the light strip glowed at half strength. Beyond that, the night was dangerously dark. Too dark to assess the damage. Too dark to collect the dead. They'd have to wait until dawn and hope there were bodies left to burn. Meanwhile, people kept streaming into the compound, the population of several blocks crammed into a handful of buildings. The lobby was packed, as was the training hall and every apartment. Even the Flynn's home was being divvied up between Sorrow's and August's squads. So he stayed there, on the floor, outside the infirmary, and slicked damp hair off his face as a familiar set of steps came toward him down the hall. Everyone was made of sounds, and August had learned hers the first day they met. Kate slumped against the opposite wall. She hadn't said anything since they'd left the tunnel. Dust and debris streaked her fatigues. She didn't look well. Her skin was beaded with sweat, and the silver was threading out across both eyes. "I keep waiting for someone to arrest me again," she said. "Everyone seems to be busy." There was no humor in the words. Her tone was cool, her gaze flat, and August guessed why. Alice. August rose to his feet.
"Come with me,"
he said, reaching for her hand. She let him lead her, but her shoulders were tense, her body coiled. "Where are we going?"
"Somewhere private."
She raised an eyebrow, as if such a place didn't exist anymore. There was a line for the elevators, so they took the stairs, climbing floor after floor in silence. Not a comfortable silence, but the kind that grew stiffer with every step. August didn't know what to say, and if Kate did, she didn't plan on saying it. Not yet. When they reached the top, he led her not to the apartment, but up the hidden stairs to the flat stretch of the compound's roof. For months, he'd imagined showing her this view. In his mind, Kate sat beside him, shoulder to shoulder on the sun-warm stone, and they looked out at the city. In his mind, the war was over, and there was no north and south, no monster and human, only Verity, and a blanket of stars shining through the dark. In his mind, it didn't go like this. The moment they were alone, the levee broke. Kate turned on him. "Did you know?" He could have deflected the question. After all, it hadn't been explicit, but he knew exactly what she was asking about. "Did you know?" August let the truth rise up.
"Yes, about a week after Sloan took control. We were on a rescue mission."
"All this time," she whispered. "You knew she was here and you didn't tell me." His eyes flicked to Kate's shadow, the thin shape twitching like a tail behind her.
"All actions have costs. On some level, you had to know."
"No," she shook her head. "I knew what would happen, but I thought, I hoped, whatever it was somewhere out there, haunting the waste. It wasn't supposed to be here."
"Well, it is," said August. "It came back, with Sloan."
Kate wrapped her arms around her ribs. It looks like me, August. That thing.
"Alice is nothing like you."
Kate's head shot up. "Alice?"
"That's what she calls herself."
Something gave way inside Kate. He could feel it. "Of course." She looked up at the sky in a way that said she simply couldn't look at him. "My father told me that Malkai take their names from our shadows, our ghosts, whatever haunts us most. Sloan was his right-hand man, not his first kill, but the first one to leave a mark."
"And Alice?"
Kate closed her eyes. "Alice was my mother. I pulled the trigger in that house. I shot that stranger, but Alice Harker was my first murder. I'm the reason we ran away. I'm the reason Callum sent his monster after us. I'm the reason she's dead." Two tears escaped down Kate's face, but before August could reach out, she was scrubbing them away. "I'm the reason that monster is here." August swallowed. He couldn't lie. But the truth was cruel. He took a careful step toward Kate, and when she didn't pull away, he wrapped his arms around her. She didn't soften against him, but held on tight.
"We'll stop her,"
said August. "She's my shadow," said Kate, pressing her face into his collar. And when she spoke again, the words were so quiet, a human would never have heard them. "I'll stop her myself." Chapter 5. Sloane peeled off the gloves and examined his hands, the blistered, oozing surface of his palms.
Sacrifice, he mused to the shrouded cage. Callum used to say that sacrifice is a cornerstone of success. Of course, Callum preferred sacrificing others.
He trailed off when he heard Alice coming. That in and of itself was odd. She usually had an uncanny ability to appear and disappear without warning. But tonight her steps echoed through the basement. They came not from the stairs, but from the subway tunnel on the other side. During Harker's reign, the Malkai had been forced to come and go that way, so as not to frighten the building's human tenants. In the months since Sloane's ascent, and until his newest project, the tunnel had become the realm of the Corsi and the Corsi alone. But here she was, dusted with ash.
How was our little diversion? He asked. I heard the blasts from...
She's here, cut in Alice.
Who?
Kate Harker, she said, eyes burning bright. She's here.
The words sent a perfect shiver down Sloane's spine. Not fear, oh no, but something sweet. The taste of fresh blood spilling over his tongue, the tang of hate, and the thought of life going out of those blue eyes. Callum's eyes set into his daughter's face. Eyes that no stand-in, no surrogate, no sacrifice could replace.
You saw her.
She looks like me, but wrong. All squishy and human. And she's with the Sunai. When did she get here? Did you know?
Alice couldn't contain her excitement. She began to pace.
I wanted to tear her throat out right then and there, but there would have been nothing to save her, and I was caught off guard. But next time...
You will not kill her, said Sloane.
Alice's red eyes widened.
But she's mine.
She was mine first.
You can have whoever you want.
I know.
Alice let out a low snarl before his fingers wrapped around her narrow throat. Pain flared across his ruined palms, and Alice bared her teeth and drove her nails into his arms, but he didn't let go. Alice had obviously forgotten. Forgotten what she was, what he was. Forgotten that she was not predator to him, but prey. Drops of black blood slid down her neck where his fingers cut in. He lifted her thin body off the ground.
Listen to me, he said smoothly, and listen well. We are not equals, you and I. We are not family. We are not blood. You are a whelp, a shadow. Your strength is the barest echo of my strength. You continue to exist because I let you. But the scales of my favor are delicate, and if you tip them any more, I will rip your fangs out with my bare hands, one by one, and leave you to starve. Do you understand?
Alice let out a low, feral sound before answering,
Yes.
He saw her start to form the word father and tightened his grip. And then he let go, and Alice slumped to her knees, breathing heavily. When she brought her hand to her throat, Sloane was pleased to see her fingers tremble. He knelt before her.
Now, now,
he cooed, drawing his gloves back on.
Catherine belongs to me, but if you're useful, I will share.
Slowly, Alice looked up, her red eyes blazing and her voice hoarse.
What do you want me to do?
Chapter 6.
How are you feeling?
Kate peeled her head up from August's shoulder. She knew from his tone, so cautious, so careful, that he wasn't talking about Alice anymore. "I'm still me," she said, because that was as close to the truth as she could get.
"If Sloane has the Chaos Eater..."
"He does."
"Then we know where to find it. We'll get a team together and..."
August's calm went off in a short shower of static. Kate pulled away as Henry's voice came over the line.
"I could use some steady hands down here."
She took a step toward the edge of the roof. Months ago, the city had blazed with light. Now it sprawled in varying degrees of shadow, dotted by patches of solid black.
"I'm on my way,"
August said into the comm, starting toward the rooftop door. "I thought you hated blood," said Kate.
"I do," said August. "But life can't always be pleasant."
He hesitated by the door, obviously waiting for her to follow, but Kate couldn't bear the claustrophobic compound. Not yet. "If it's all right, I'll stay up here a little longer." August looked uncertain, but she waved her hand at the vast expanse of nothing. "Where am I going to go?" she teased. "Besides," she cracked a tired smile, "sorrow's less likely to find me up here. And I'm less likely to hurt someone." August relented.
"Okay,"
he said.
"Just don't get too close to the edge."
The door swung shut, and Kate was alone. She didn't realize she was fraying until she began to unravel. She sank into a crouch on the rooftop and wrapped her arms around her knees, the image of the monster, of Alice, ghosted behind her eyes. The casualty report, its gruesome murders all marked with an A. What had she done? She'd spent the last 6 months trying to save another city while hers burned. 6 months hunting monsters while her own hunted here. Something chimed in the pocket of her gear. Kate dragged her head up. She'd grabbed the vest of the sublevel wall and never had a chance to check the pockets. Rooting around, she came up with a palm-sized tablet, standard issue for all the FTFs. Someone must have left theirs in the gear and... Kate's thoughts broke apart when she saw the message on the screen. It was titled K-O-H, the kind of acronym you wouldn't know unless it belonged to you. Catherine Olivia Harker. And when she tapped the screen, she saw that the message hadn't been sent to this one tablet. It had been sent to all of them. A blanket broadcast across the FTF feed. The message was only one line.
"Are you afraid of your own shadow? A."
Kate forgot to breathe. She was back in the tunnel, watching her shadow escape into the dark and wanting to follow. And this time, there was no sorrow, no August, nothing to distract her, and she was already on her feet, heading for the door, the stairs, the way down, out. The need burned through her veins like fever. And even without the voiceless presence in her skull pushing her on, she knew that Alice was her making, her monster. And it was her job to kill it, before it killed anyone else. It turned out Henry didn't want August to scrub in. He wanted him to play.
"To the wounded," he explained,
gesturing at the infirmary and the FTFs who'd been caught in the power station blasts. 2 dozen men and women laid out on cots. The compound was running low on sedatives. Injuries had grown fairly rare in the FTF. When it came to missions, most either got out in one piece or didn't get out at all.
"The room isn't soundproofed," said August.
"Then play softly,"
countered his father.
"It's worth some dazed bystanders, if it helps with their pain."
August fetched his violin. Henry stepped outside, and August closed the door behind him and drew up a chair, bow hesitating over the strings. He thought of the soldier in the cell, sorrow snapping the man's neck, Leo saying it was a waste. But he also thought of the relief washing over the soldier, the struggle going out of his limbs.
"Maybe there is more to us than murder."
He started to play, softly. And within seconds, the muffled sounds of pain fell away. The tension in the patient's limbs slackened, their breathing eased, and their souls began to surface, filling the infirmary with pale but steady light. August exhaled, his own body loosening with the music. And for the first time in 4 years, the song itself felt like a kind of nourishment, filling him like light, like life, like a soul. And tablets began to chime. They went off at once, all over the compound, and August faltered, losing the melody. A broadcast? Across the entire task force? He set the instrument aside, drawing his own device from his pocket. He read the message once, then again and again. And then he was on his feet, the violin abandoned as he ran. The doors banged open, revealing an empty roof, an open sky, and no Kate. August backtracked to the apartment, trying to stay calm, telling himself she wouldn't do this, wouldn't walk straight into a trap, not alone, that Kate was smarter than that. But he also heard the words she'd whispered into his collar, and saw the silver dancing in her eyes, a demon twisting her thoughts toward violence. Harris and Ani were playing cards on the couch, Allegro between them. Ani looked up.
I didn't know you had a cat.
Jackson was making coffee, his tablet in his hand.
Hey, August, any idea what this means?
He didn't answer. The bedroom was empty. The bathroom was empty. Harris was on his feet now.
What's going on?
I'll kill her myself. He should never have left her alone. It's Kate, isn't it? Said Ani, shoving on her boots. I can tell by your face. Jackson blocked his path, coffee in hand. August was taller, but Jackson was broader by far.
Get out of my way, ordered August. Where are we going, Captain? You aren't going anywhere, said August.
Ani tisked. No solo missions.
I'd never ask. You don't have to,
said Harris, zipping up his vest.
You go, we go.
August shook his head.
You don't even care about her.
No, said Ani, holstering a blade. But you do, and that's a first. Jackson downed the last of his coffee.
Where's she headed? The tower, said August. Odds of catching her before she hits the seam? Depends if she's on foot.
Ani was on the comm.
Alpha Squad here, we need a jeep.
Just like that, they'd fallen into form, as if this were any other mission.
Thank you.
Don't thank us, boss. Not until we bring her back.
Kate was many things, but she wasn't stupid. She knew it was a trap. Of course she did. But the way she saw it, either Alice would be waiting for her or Sloane would, and either way, she had a debt to pay. She didn't look back, couldn't afford to second guess. The seam rose ahead of her, and the line of light that traced its spine must have been on a different transformer because it was still up, soldiers pacing on top. Kate secured her helmet and started up the ladder, reminding herself over and over that she was one of them. Or rather, still suited up from the attack at the power station, she looked like one of them. She crested the edge and stepped onto the seam spine, thankful she'd never been afraid of heights. North City sprawled out below her. From this position, she could see down the main thoroughfare, straight to Harker Hall.
What are you doing here?
Demanded an FTF with the bearing of a squad leader. Kate didn't hesitate. Pauses give a lie away.
Here to relieve someone, sir.
The soldier held out a hand as if to shake, but when Kate took it, he pulled her close.
Relief units arrived 10 minutes ago,
he said, squeezing her fingers. Try again. Kate let out an exasperated breath. She really didn't have time for this. One hand still pinned in the FTF's grip, she drew her gun with the other, leveling it at his chest. I'm going over this wall, she said quietly. One way or another. The dark sang through her, the weight of the steel in her hand, the shock on his face, the dizzying relief of being in control. It would be so easy. But she kept the safety on and her finger away from the trigger, and the sight of the weapon, or maybe her willingness to use it, was enough to make the man let go.
Kate took a step toward the nearest ladder.
I'll call it in, he said, the second you're gone.
Go ahead, said Kate, swinging her leg over the lip. If August didn't know, he would soon. The Jeep was waiting at the edge of the light strip, and so was Sorrow. The Sunai stood between August and the idling vehicle. Sometimes, when Leo had been in a righteous mood, the energy had practically wicked off him, like heat. Ilsa, too, seemed to create her own cloud whenever her thoughts began to spiral, and she had told August more than once that, when he was sad, she could feel it in the air around him, like a cold front. If it was true that a Sunai could alter the space around them, then the air around Sorrow was a storm. August signaled for his squad to stay put and started forward across the grid. You're going after her, said Sorrow. It wasn't a question.
I am.
Sorrow didn't move, and August had to. Kate was getting farther away by the second.
If you intend to stop me?
Sorrow's gray eyes hardened. You would risk these lives and yours for a sinner.
No,
said August.
I would risk them for a friend.
The Sunai let out a low breath and marched toward him, and August braced himself for a fight. But it didn't come. Sorrow just kept walking, back toward the compound. You should go then, they said, before it's too late. Chapter 7 The Jeep skidded to a stop at the base of the seam. Word had come over the comms a minute before. A young female soldier had forced her way through at gunpoint. Jackson flashed the high beams, but the gate didn't open, and August and Harris climbed out as an FTF started toward them.
We're on lockdown, sir. No one crosses. But you've already let someone through. She pulled a gun. Is that all it takes?
Asked Harris, freeing his sidearm. August caught his wrist. Somewhere nearby, tires skidded over asphalt. Another vehicle was headed their way.
We need to get through, he said to the soldier. Now.
The FTF shook his head.
I'm under strict orders, and I'm August Flynn. With respect,
he said.
My orders come from the top.
Lights flared against the side of the seam as the second Jeep swung to a stop, and Henry got out. Had Sorrow told him, or had he seen the message for himself?
Henry, I have to—
Sir,
said the soldier at the same time.
I was just—
Open the gate,
ordered Henry. This time, the soldier didn't hesitate. He radioed the order, and the gate began to grind open. August turned toward his father.
You're letting us go?
No,
said Henry, moving toward August's Jeep.
I'm coming with you.
No offense, sir, said Harris, but I don't think that's a good idea.
Henry laughed softly as he opened the door.
Well, then it's a good thing I outrank you.
We can handle it from here, insisted Ani. But August only stared at his father, his sickly pallor, his too thin form. It made no sense. Henry was in no shape to fight.
Why?
Henry put a hand on his shoulder.
I am a man, not a movement, he said.
But if a movement is what it takes to end this war, then I will play my part. Now,
his hand tightened and then was gone.
Let's go find Miss Harker.
North City had gotten darker. That was Kate's first thought as she moved through the streets, HUV in one hand and gun in the other. The Corsi murmured from the shadows, flashing teeth and claws.
Harker, Harker, it's a Harker.
Her FTF gear was traced with metal, but there was a difference between deterring monsters and stopping them, and she tried to stay in the light, what little there was. Her father's tower rose ahead of her, or rather, a hulking shadow loomed in its place. Kate's step slowed. She stopped beneath a single low-wattage streetlight, its flickering bulb the only thing standing between her and a blackout zone. It carved a lightless circle around the base of Harker Hall, a dark inversion of the moat that surrounded the compound. It felt like a physical thing, that darkness. Something more than air and night. A wall of black. And, embedded in that wall, a pair of red eyes. The Malkai stepped out of the shadows, and Kate saw not her own shadow, but her father's. Sloane. She'd seen him in dreams, in memories, but they paled compared to the truth. In her visions, he'd been reduced to a shape in a dark suit, reduced to fangs and blood and malice. But now he stood before her, gray flesh pulled tight over blackened bones, fingers ending in silver points. Fear slammed through Kate's chest, and Sloane smiled as if he could hear the traitorous thing raging in her pulse. When he spoke, his voice grazed her skin like a knife, metal across skin. Catherine. The sound of her name on his lips, sweet and taunting. Sloane, she said, fighting to keep her tone dry. What a surprise. He spread his hands. You didn't think I'd let Alice keep you to herself. Not when we have such history. Her fingers tightened on the gun. The night rustled around her, dotted with red as shadows emerged from the darkness. Malkai. Not one or two, but a half dozen forming a loose circle around them. Not exactly a fair fight. Sloane clicked his tongue. What place does fair have in a world like ours? Fair is a white flag, a word for cowards. He gestured to her clothing. You've traded sides. Your father would be disappointed. My father is dead. She kept her head high. She wanted to look Sloane in the eyes when she killed him. Slid the knife under his skin and up into his heart, savoring the delicious warmth. The Chaos Eater whispered through her, hungry for Sloane's blood. Her fear replaced by hatred, cold and steady. But she held the monster at bay. Not yet. Not yet. There would be no going back. She would let it out if she had to. When she had to. But it would be on her terms. You've changed, observed Sloane. His lips parted, revealing pointed teeth. But I can still taste your... Down, dog, she snarled, firing the gun. But Sloane moved like light, like smoke, like nothing. And by the time the shot rang out, he was behind her, an arm around her shoulders as he pulled her back against him. His breath was ice against her neck. I've waited for this. Keep waiting, she growled, slamming her elbow back and up into the side of his head. Sloane was fast, but Kate had learned to fight dirty. He fell back a single step, but it was enough for her to get free and put two paces, three, between them. Sloane laughed, a horrible sound, too high. You are even more stubborn than I remember. The other Malkai shifted and stirred, bloodlust heavy in the air, but Sloane had obviously told them this was his kill. How long would they listen? Her father had tried to keep the Malkai on a leash. It hadn't gone well. Kate drew a knife as Sloane came at her again. She slashed, expecting him to retreat, or at least to dodge. He didn't. Instead, the Malkai shifted the slightest step left and let the knife plunge right into his arm as he continued forward, closing the distance between them. Black blood welled up, staining the sleeve of Sloane's suit, but neither surprise nor pain registered on his face. Kate didn't even have time to draw the blade back, to retreat. He was inside her guard. His hand closed around her neck, his shoe caught her heel, and for a terrible second, when she hit the pavement, they were back in the gravel outside the house in the waist, Sloane pressing her body down into broken rock, fingers tight around her throat. She forced her mind back to the present. Sloane was on top of her, the hilt of the knife pinned between them so she couldn't free the blade. The gun was still in her other hand, but when she tried to bring it up, his fingers closed around it, forcing her wrist against the pavement. He bore down on her. He didn't smell like death. He never had. No, he smelled like violence,
like leather and blood and pain. His sharpened teeth flashed as he sank them into her arm, and a scream tore from Kate's throat. The darkness began to fold around her mind, the monster rising, but Sloane drew back sharply. His mouth was painted with her blood, but he wasn't smiling. His hand raked through her hair, forcing her head back, not to bare her throat, she realized, but to see her eyes. A snarl of anger escaped his lips.
"What have you done?"
he demanded, right before a pair of high beams sliced through the dark. Sloane was halfway to his feet when a gunshot tore the air and a shatter shell hit him in the chest. The Jeep screeched to a halt, Harris and his gun still hanging out the window. Sloane staggered backward, and the other monster surged through the dark in a frenzy of nails and teeth. August was already out of the Jeep, drawing a knife as Harris lunged into the fray. Ani detonated a series of light grenades, a blinding strobe effect that left the Maokai dazed and gave Jackson and Henry time to get to Kate, who was already up. Blood dripped from her fingers, but she had a gore-slicked knife in one hand and a gun in the other. Sloane, too, was on his feet. The shell had hit him in the chest, tearing through suit and skin, but it clearly hadn't reached his heart. His red eyes found August, and August lunged toward him, only to be cut off by two other Maokai. He didn't stop. He slit one's throat and drove the blade up under the other's ribs, Leo's voice weaving through his head. "This is your purpose, and doesn't it feel good?" He twisted, searching for Sloane, as Harris let out a strangled cry. A Maokai had its fangs in his shoulder, but then Ani was there, driving a knife through its neck. It went down, and Harris yowled and stomped on the Maokai's chest until it cracked, splintered, gave.
"I think it's dead," called Jackson, wiping a streak of gore from his cheek. "They're all dead."
August turned, searching. Kate clutched her arm as Ani put pressure on Harris's shoulder, and August realized with a sick dread that none of the bodies on the ground belonged to Sloane. The Maokai was gone, and so was Henry Flynn. Chapter 8. Gone. What do you mean, gone? Emily Flynn was not a shouter. The few times August had seen her angry, truly angry, her voice lost all its volume, all its warmth. She went cold and quiet. The rest of the FTF council wasn't nearly as composed, their questions ricocheting through the command center. Ilsa stood in the doorway, a faraway look in her eyes, and August wished she still had her voice, even though he knew that if she tried to speak right now, what came out would be only wondering, wandering, lost. Sorrow had their voice, but they stood silently against the wall, their expression level in every way but one, their eyes. Sorrow's eyes, the color of stone, asked a silent question. Was she worth it? Emily held up a hand, calling for silence as she leaned across the table and met August's gaze. "Explain it to me." He opened his mouth, but it was Kate who spoke. She pulled free of the medic, bandaging her arm. "It's my fault."
"I believe you," said Em, "but that doesn't answer my question."
"He insisted," said August.
"I'm going with you."
Markhan shook his head.
"Why would he do that?"
"Why would you let him?" added Emily, her attention still on August. Why had he? Because Henry Flynn was in charge of the FTF? Because he believed in something greater than himself? Because August believed he had a plan?
"Because he's dying."
August heard the words come out of his mouth. The room went quiet. Emily's face darkened. Henry had never said the words, not to August, and August had never asked. He hadn't needed to, hadn't wanted to, not in the months of watching Henry grow thin, of listening to his cough, and not in the moments after they crossed the seam. There was a strange place between knowing and not knowing. A place where things could live in the back of your head without weighing down your heart.
"That doesn't explain," started Paris.
"Doesn't it?" challenged Kate. "Maybe he wanted his death to mean something."
You have no right to talk,
said Markhan. If you hadn't gone, added Shaya, Henry wouldn't... If I hadn't gone, said Kate, Henry Flynn would have found another excuse to get himself killed. The air grew brittle, and August felt Ilsa and sorrow stiffen.
We don't know that he's dead, said Emily, tightly.
What do we tell the task force?
Asked Markhan.
We can't tell them, argued Shaya.
You have to, said Kate and Bennett at the same time. Emily straightened.
Henry would want them to know.
Ilsa tapped on the doorframe. August and Sorrow glanced toward her. No one else seemed to hear. He watched as his sister produced a tablet, fingers dancing on the screen.
The last thing we need, said Markhan, is an uprising.
Actually, said Paris, I think that's exactly what we need.
Ilsa's fingers gave a flourish, and every screen in the room burst to life, showing feeds, not of the city outside, but of the compound itself. The training hall turned barracks, the lobby, the canteen, room after room filled with people, all of them talking. Sound spilled into the room, a cacophony of voices as cadets and captains, soldiers and night squads spoke up and over and around one another.
They've got Commander Flynn.
We can't just sit here. We should be out there.
What are we waiting for?
Well, said Kate, it looks like they already know.
August remembered Henry's last words.
He's a man, not a movement,
he said, echoing his father.
But if a movement is what it takes to end this war...
Emily met his gaze across the table.
If Henry is alive, she said slowly, then we will fight to get him back.
Markhan crossed his arms.
And what if he's not?
Sloane pried the shards of metal from his skin with a pair of tweezers, dropping the slivers into the dish one by one, each coated in viscous black blood. His suit was ruined, his shirt cast aside, his bare chest a mess of torn flesh. The shards were silver, and his skin sizzled as he dug them out. But the sensation was shallow and fleeting, and it was not so very different from pleasure. He told himself to relish it, though his hand trembled as he worked. The two engineers lay slumped against the table, their throats torn open. He hadn't had time to savor the kills, but the meal had helped with the wound, helped rinse away the rancid taste of Kate's blood in his mouth. Across the room, Flynn's head lolled forward, a thin ribbon of blood tracing a line from the man's temple to his chin before dripping to the floor. Sloane had always imagined Henry Flynn as the flip side of a coin. Callum Harker's equal but opposite force. He was wrong. Up close, Flynn was nothing but a too-thin human with graying temples and sallow skin. He smelled sickly. So disappointing. Still, Sloane couldn't help but marvel at the fortune of it, having the head of the FTF dropped in his lap. He'd lost Catherine and gained an idol, even if it was a false one. Sloane straightened, wiping the last of the blood from his shoulder.
Why isn't he dead? Asked Alice, storming in. And what happened to you?
Her gaze flicked to the engineers.
You didn't save me any.
Sloane slid on a fresh black shirt.
You're supposed to be watching our pet.
Where is Kate? She demanded. You promised.
Catherine will return to us, said Sloane. And when she does, he added, you can have her.
Alice beamed at that.
Did you evacuate the Malkai?
Asked Sloane.
Most of them, she said, hopping onto the counter.
She looked down at the bowl of shrapnel and crinkled her nose.
There's a few in the lobby, but they were sound asleep. I didn't want to wake them.
Her attention flicked to Flynn.
Speaking of...
Sloane turned in time to see Flynn's eyelids flutter open. He tried to move, but Sloane had bound him to the chair with wire, and he watched as Flynn struggled, winced, and then went still, realizing where he was.
I have to admit, said Sloane, buttoning his shirt. I expected more.
Flynn coughed, a deep rattle in his chest.
Sorry to disappoint.
You didn't put up much of a fight, he mused.
One might almost think you wanted to end up in this position, hoping to rally the troops.
The man looked up at that, and Sloane saw that he was right.
That was quite a gamble, Mr. Flynn.
Unlike you,
he said, a hitch in his voice.
I care about more than my own life. The task force will finally bring the fight here to me, to you.
Sloane reached out and spun Flynn's chair toward the windows. They were still 2 hours from dawn, and the night was at its thickest. He pointed toward the beacon of light that was the FTF compound and lowered his head to whisper in the man's ear.
That, he said, is exactly what I'm counting on.
Flynn tensed. Alice, now cross-legged on the counter, only chuckled.
Time to lay out the cards and see who has the better hand.
Flynn shook his head.
Kate knew you'd see it as a game.
Alice's eyes brightened at the mention of her maker, but Sloane held up a hand.
Do you believe in fate? Callum did not, neither do I. And yet, here you are.
Alice began toying with a circle of metal. It was a collar, the kind worn by the fangs. Sloane plucked it from her hands.
Make yourself useful,
he told her, flicking his fingers toward a camera on a stand. Alice sighed and hopped off the counter. Sloane returned to Flynn's side and fastened the collar around the man's throat, relishing the visible shiver that ran through Flynn at the metal's touch. Sloane swung the chair back around and considered his work.
Something was missing.
He took up a roll of tape.
When I first met Leo, he asked me if I believed in God.
The tape made a ripping sound as he pulled a length free.
I think he expected me to say no. But if we are not proof of a higher power, what is?
He tore the strip with his teeth.
I like to think that we are simply what you humans have sowed and reaped. You have earned us. Leo and I saw eye to eye on that.
Flynn's gaze hardened.
He drove a metal bar into your back.
Sloane flicked his hand dismissively.
I would have done the same to him. Monstrous acts I can respect. Besides, he did miss.
Flynn looked at him with fire in his eyes. So there was still a spark left.
If you're going to kill me...
Oh, I don't plan on doing that. Much as I would enjoy it.
Sloane leaned in.
Dead, you are a martyr.
He pressed the tape over Flynn's mouth.
Alive? You're simply bait.
They were all idiots, thought Kate. Henry Flynn had handed the FTF a cause, a reason to fight. And the council couldn't get out of their own damn way. It doesn't matter if he's alive, she said, a remark that earned her August's wide eyes and Sorrow's cold glare and a whole lot of judgment from the rest of the room. She pressed on. You've always been divided into North and South, us and them. You keep talking about safety, about defense. But these people, your soldiers, they want to fight. And now they have something, someone to fight for. So for God's sake, don't waste it. Just then, the screens throughout the room crackled and went dark. Everyone looked to Ilsa, but Ilsa was staring at her own tablet in a way that made it clear this wasn't her doing. The signal came back up, But instead of broadcasting from the various compound rooms, every single screen showed the same image. Henry Flynn. Bloody, half-conscious, but alive. There was no sound on the feed, and even if there had been, his mouth was taped shut, some kind of steel contraption around his neck. It took her a second to process the wires, the small timer ticking down. 59 minutes, 57 seconds. 59 minutes, 56 seconds. 59 minutes, 55 seconds. 59 minutes, 54 seconds. And just like that, the room burst into motion. Chairs pushed back and people rose. The signal was being broadcast across the entire feed to every screen and every tablet, not just in the command center, but across the whole compound. It was a gift, a point of no return. The FTFs, already gunning for their fight, had just been given their target, the tower. And even if the council members wanted to argue, they'd never be able to stop the soldiers now. 59 minutes, 42 seconds. 59 minutes, 41 seconds. 59 minutes, 40 seconds. Ilsa spread her hands across the largest screen, fingers splayed over Henry Flynn's gray face, while August and Emily and Sorrow spoke into their comms, relaying orders through the ranks. Assemble squads 1 through 36. Authorizing arms clearance. Lockdown procedure. Kate was still staring at the feed, not at Flynn, but at the room around him. She recognized the floor-to-ceiling windows at his back, the chair he was tied to, the steel and glass and wood, all those cold surfaces and sharp edges that marked her father's taste. The penthouse. 58 minutes, 28 seconds. 58 minutes, 27 seconds. 58 minutes, 26 seconds. I know exactly where he is. Chapter 9. For 6 months, August had watched the FTF slowly break apart. Now, in a single breath, it came together. It was like a symphony, he thought. Every instrument in tune. Team after team of FTF cadets fell into rank across the compound, tasked with guarding the structure and the 10,000 civilians now sheltering inside while the night squads prepared to take the tower. He spotted Colin among them. The boy offered August a smile and a small salute as he passed, violin in hand. Kate walked at August's side, her gaze steady, her face blank. He'd grown used to seeing her shifting expressions, her varying moods, and it was unnerving to remember how good she was at hiding them. Could he have convinced her to stay behind? No. This was her fight as much as his, perhaps even more. He was almost to the doors when Ilsa caught his wrist and pulled him back. "What is it?" he asked, and she threw her arms around his neck, her grip so strong it startled him. "Don't go," her arms seemed to say. Or maybe simply, "Come back." And he wondered if she'd known all along that this was where they were headed. If this was what she'd seen in the city she'd made on the kitchen counter, the one reduced to grains of sugar that tasted like ash. August pulled away, or Ilsa pushed him, he wasn't sure, only knew that the weight of her arms was gone. The heart of the night squads had assembled on the light grid, more than 300 soldiers armed and ready for war, and August swung the violin case onto his shoulder as they made their way to the jeep at the front of the convoy. Harris, Jackson, and Ani were already inside. M was at the wheel. A bandage dotted with blood shone beneath Harris's collar, but he was wide-eyed and gunning for a fight. He made room, and August was halfway into the jeep when Sorrow strode over from another vehicle and held out a bag. Not to him, but to Kate. When she hesitated, clearly suspicious, Sorrow dropped the bag at her feet and walked back toward their own squad. It landed with a metallic clang, and Kate knelt and retrieved a pair of iron spikes. "You shouldn't have," she called after the Sunai before stepping up into the jeep. August laid the violin across his lap, and Kate sat beside him, turning a spike between her fingers. And as the jeep pulled out, he glanced back at the compound and saw his sister standing at the front doors, one hand pressed against the glass. But he was too far away to read her face. Sloane approached the gold shroud. The shadow in the cage was growing restless. Its silence had changed from a hand to a fist, from a fist to a leaden weight. Its displeasure like a cold snap in the basement.
"Chaos, chaos, chaos, chaos," whispered the Corsi from their corners.
The truck idled nearby. Amalkai opened the back and lowered a ramp, and Sloane watched as four more took up wooden poles and slipped them beneath the covered cage and lifted. The monster inside weighed nothing, but the cage was steel, and the Amalkai struggled under its weight.
"Mind the gold," advised Sloane, adjusting his gloves.
The sheet shifted, nearly brushing Amalkai's skin, and he snarled, almost dropping his end. But Sloane was there to catch it. He would have torn out the monster's throat, but they were on a schedule. At last, the cage was loaded onto the truck, and Sloane stepped up beside it, the closeness of the gold a pain he tried to savor. He could feel the shadow beneath the shroud, like an ache in his teeth, a thirst in his throat, and knew that it was hungry.
"Soon, my pet."
39 minutes, 8 seconds. 39 minutes, 7 seconds. 39 minutes, 6 seconds. The convoy tore through the night, Emily Flynn's voice carrying in the car and across the comms at the same time. "Every squad has been assigned a floor to clear. You will move systematically through the tower. Maokai are to be eliminated on sight. Fangs are to be incapacitated. As you've been informed, there is another kind of monster somewhere in the building, one with the ability to alter minds. If you encounter it, you are to close your eyes. If any members of your team are affected, you are to incapacitate them." They reached the seam. The gates were open. They didn't stop. Time ticked away inside Kate's head as the Jeep barreled toward the wall of darkness at the tower's base. Her arm throbbed from the jagged wound Sloane's teeth had made earlier that night. But she held on to the pain like a tether, the blood seeping through the bandage a reminder that she was still human. The jeeps hit the blackout zone and plunged in, their high beams scattering the creatures in the dark. August leaned over and spoke into her good ear.
"What's wrong?"
"Nothing. Something. Everything." She wasn't sure. She had been. Until she'd seen Henry Flynn on that feed, bound up like a prize. Like a present. It was too simple, too obvious, too easy. Was it a taunt? Was it a trap? What was waiting for them in that tower? Sloane? Alice? The Chaos Eater? Were they all playing by Sloane's rules? Did they have a choice? She was missing something. They were all missing something, and it was right there, just out of focus, a glance out of sight.
"Kate,"
pressed August. "What if we're wrong?" she murmured softly, so that only he could hear. "What if this is a mistake?" August's brow furrowed.
"This is what Henry wanted,"
he said.
"What we needed, a reason to attack."
And he was right. Everything was going exactly to plan. And that was exactly why she didn't trust it. The jeeps came to a stop at the base of the tower. August strained to hear as they cut the engines, but there were too many soldiers, too much static. They kept the lights up, blocking out the darkness, and the Corsi shifting hungrily within it. Claws scraped against the sides of the jeeps wherever the light failed to reach, a high-pitched whine of nails on metal. The night squads gathered at the base of the stairs. Most had guns, but Kate gripped an iron spike. August had his bow out like a sword, and Sorrow held their flute knife in a fighter's grip. They climbed the tower steps as if every one of the 6 stairs might be rigged. But nothing happened. No wires tripped. No sudden blasts. August and Sorrow took the lead, stopping before the tower doors. The space beyond was dark, and August spread his hand against the glass, listening for the tick of a bomb, the rattle and hiss of Corsi waiting to be unleashed. But all he heard were the racing hearts of the FTF at his back, and a soft, almost imperceptible breathing somewhere inside. He nodded at Sorrow,
and together they threw open the tower doors. Light grenades rolled across the lobby floor. The bounce of metal on stone followed a second later by waves of glaring white as the FTF poured in, their weapons raised. A dozen Maokai sprang up, hissing in surprise before lunging at the nearest soldiers, their teeth bared. August turned and slashed a monster's throat as Kate drove her spike through another's chest, and Harris made a triumphant sound as he cut down a third. Sorrow dispatched two more, clearing a path, and they sprinted across the lobby to the bank of elevators on the other side. Emily got there first, calling the car as the rest reached the doors and spun back to face whatever was coming for them. But nothing came. The dozen Maokai were dead, and the other night squads were already peeling off, heading for the other floors.
Too easy,
thought August, as the doors slid open behind them. Too easy, whispered Kate as they stepped inside. She punched the button for the penthouse with the familiarity of someone returning home. She seemed to realize it, too, her hand hovering in the air. Don't jinx us, warned Ani as the elevator rose.
Yeah, said Jackson. We can fall to our death at any second.
They all went quiet then. The only sounds in the steel box, their heartbeats, and the almost inaudible murmur of Emily marking time. August had never been afraid of dying, for all he thought about it. It bothered him, of course, the idea of being unmade, but his own death was a concept he couldn't grasp, no matter how hard he tried. But loss? That was a thing that scared him. The loss of those he cared for. The loss of himself. The absence left by both. Leo would have scorned such a thing. Sorrow wouldn't understand the point, and Ilsa was never one to dwell on the inevitable. But to August, that fear was the shadow in his life, the monster he could fight but never kill. The reason he had wanted so badly not to feel. And as he stood there, surrounded by his family, his team, his friends, the fear took hold. Because Ilsa was alone and Henry was dying, and so much of what he loved could fit within a metal box. And it could all be lost. Kate gave his hand a single squeeze before the elevator stopped, and the doors slid open. Chapter 10 The penthouse stretched before them, quiet and dark, and the first thing August heard was the sound of stifled breath. He barreled forward without thinking, down the hall and into the living room, and there he was, Henry, bound to the chair, dazed and pale, but alive. The red numbers flashed on the collar at his throat. 24 minutes, 52 seconds. 24 minutes, 51 seconds. 24 minutes, 50 seconds. Ani, ordered Emily, but the tech was already there at Henry's side, and Jackson, too, checking his vitals as Harris and Sorrow moved through the apartment. Em knelt before her husband. I'm here, she said. We're here. You're an absolute fool, and I'm going to kill you after we save you, but we're here. Henry tried to speak, but his mouth was taped shut. And when Em reached to pull the tape free, Ani stopped her. Don't touch anything, she warned. Not until I defuse this. Henry's head lolled forward as the comm crackled at August's collar.
Second floor, we've got nothing.
There are two dead bodies over here, said Kate. Both human. Harris reappeared.
Rooms are clear.
There's no one else here, said Sorrow. It didn't make sense.
Third floor, empty,
said another voice on the comm. August looked around. Where were the Maokai? Where were the Fangs? Where were all the monsters? He saw the same question written on Kate's face as she drew a tablet out from beneath one of the corpses. This doesn't make any sense, said Ani, tugging at the device. Wait, started Em. But Ani was already pulling the collar away from Henry's throat, prying the pieces apart with a force that no one should use when handling a live bomb. But then August realized it wasn't live. It wasn't a bomb at all. Just a collar, like the ones worn by the Fangs, with a few added pieces of colored wire. A timer.
What the hell? Said Harris.
Fourth floor, nothing here.
With the collar free, Ani eased the tape from Henry's mouth. He was hoarse, his breath rasping, but his words echoed through the penthouse.
It's a trap.
Everyone stiffened as the reports continued on the comms.
Fifth floor, we haven't found a thing.
If it's a trap, said Em, then why haven't we been attacked? Because, said Kate, holding up the tablet, we're not the target. Through a streak of blood on the screen, August saw a map of the city, a too familiar building drawn over a grid. The compound. Kate was already moving back toward the elevator.
We need to go, now.
Sorrow issued a string of orders on their comm as Jackson and Ani got Henry on his feet. His legs nearly buckled, the air wheezing in his chest. His skin was gray.
Stay with me, said Em.
Kate called the elevator, and August thought of Ilsa standing at the compound doors, of Colin in the lobby, of 10,000 innocent people crammed into a building meant for 1,500. The elevator chimed, but when the doors opened, it wasn't empty. Alice stood in the pool of light.
Going somewhere?
The truck jerked and jarred over the uneven ground as it barreled through the tunnels beneath the city, its twin beams of light carving a path through the solid black. Beyond the vehicle, the Corsi hissed, but Sloane would make it up to them. After all, there would be plenty of corpses soon. At last, the hole came into sight. Alice had done her job well. A large crater had been opened between the new tunnel and the old. The debris cleared away to make a kind of road. The truck crawled through and emerged into an abandoned subway station. A broad set of stairs had once dead-ended in a section of ceiling where the subway had been closed up, built over. But a blast had opened that too. The Malkai unloaded the cage from the truck as Sloane made his way up the stairs and stepped into the space above. He spread his arms in triumph. He was standing inside the compound. It was a simple concrete hall. S3 stenciled on the walls, a set of open steel doors leading onto cell-like rooms. They would be perfect, he thought, for the Sunai. Sorrow in this one and August in that. It would be simple enough, starving them until they went dark. The Malkai hoisted the shrouded cage into the hall and Sloane's gloved hands came to rest above the golden sheet. His skin prickled with pain, but also delicious anticipation. It was like the moment before a hunt, those precious seconds after his prey had been released, when he let the tension build inside him, let his senses heighten until everything went sharp, went clear.
Can you feel them up above? He murmured. They are my offering to you.
Sloane wrapped his fingers in the gold sheet, savoring the scorching heat as he pulled it free. He imagined himself a magician performing a trick. Only instead of hoping to render the cage empty, he hoped it was still full. And it was. Silver eyes hung in a cloud of shadow, meeting his gaze just before a siren began to blare. Sloane looked up and saw the single red eye of a security camera, and smiled, because the alarms were far, far too late. The cage was empty. The shadow was gone. The power around him flickered, dimmed, and seconds later, from somewhere above, Sloane was rewarded by the sound of screams. Chapter 11. It finds death waiting in 10,000 beating hearts, 10,000 restless bodies tuned like instruments, ready to be played. And together they will make such wonderful music. Chapter 12. Alice stepped out of the elevator. Kate's stomach turned at the sight of her. The Malkai was dressed in Kate's old clothes, the sleeves stained with dried blood. She'd even pulled her white hair back into a ponytail, her red eyes glowing beneath pale bangs. August was already raising his violin, and Sorrow's flute was halfway to their mouth. But before either of them could play, Alice opened her hand, revealing a detonator.
"Uh-uh,"
she said.
"You may be fast, but I'll be faster."
Sorrow glared, and August clenched his teeth as he lowered the instrument a fraction. It could be a bluff, thought Kate, but the gleam in Alice's red eyes said it wasn't.
"Leaving so soon? You just got here."
The words could have been meant for everyone, but Kate knew they were directed at her. And she understood. This wasn't about North and South or the war between Sloane and Flynn. This was between them.
"Alice," started August, but Kate cut him off.
"If I stay," she asked the Maokai, "will you let them go?" Alice's smile widened.
"I won't even try to stop them."
She stepped to the side and gestured toward the elevator.
"Freedom, all yours, for the low, low price of a single sinner."
"No,"
snarled August, but Kate kept her eyes on Alice.
"I've got this," she said.
"Take Henry and get back to the compound. They need you."
"We go together."
She glanced his way and saw pain in his eyes and fear, and it gave her hope. That he hadn't given up, that he was still in there.
"August,"
she said, "people are going to die if you don't leave."
"Oh,"
said Alice cheerfully.
"I imagine they're already dying."
As if on cue, static tore through the comms, followed by a distress signal, not from the night squads, but from the compound.
"Mayday! Mayday! We're under attack!"
"Tick tock,"
mused Alice. Flynn tried to straighten, to speak, but nothing came out, the air whistling through his lungs as he fought for breath.
"Oh dear," said Alice. "He doesn't sound so good."
"Go,"
snapped Kate. Sorrow was the first to move, casting an unreadable look her way as they stepped into the elevator, followed by Jackson and Ani supporting Flynn, Emily providing cover in case the Maokai changed her mind. August was the last one to go, his jaw clenched, and Kate forced herself to look at him, even managed a grim smile, suddenly grateful that a hope didn't count as a lie.
"I'll meet you back there," she said, "before the doors shut."
The jeep tore through the night. The distress signals kept coming in, filling the channel with panicked reports of a shadow and FTF's gone mad. August knew what it meant. The Chaos Eater was inside the compound. Sorrow sped up as the voices on the comms gave way to static or gunfire. In the back seat, Henry lay sprawled out, and M said, "Stay with me," over and over while Jackson monitored Henry's vitals, and August put his head in his hands and closed his eyes and saw Kate and the look on her face as he left her behind. And he told himself he didn't have a choice. But it was a lie. He always had a choice. Wasn't the point of being alive that you could choose? Kate chose. The words came from Sorrow. The look on their face told him he'd been talking out loud. She chose to stay and fight. "Now," said the Sunai, "what are we going to do?" August straightened, because Sorrow was right. Kate was fighting. Henry was fighting. It was their turn. His grip tightened on the violin. He didn't know how to stop the Chaos Eater, but he knew how to keep the FTFs from killing one another. They just had to get inside.
"When we get back to the compound,"
he said,
"you and I will go in through the back. The night squads will stay on the strip."
"Like hell,"
muttered Harris from the back seat.
"That's an order,"
said August.
"The compound is now a quarantine zone. Send it out on the comms. No one goes past the light grid. Use the jeeps to make a barrier and stop anything that comes out. Sorrow and I will handle the rest."
Sloane couldn't help himself.
He wanted to enjoy the view.
The alarms had cut off, but the power continued to flicker and dim as he ascended the stairs, the sounds of slaughter drawing nearer with every step. A body came crashing down the steps, its uniform torn as if by nails. Humans could be truly monstrous, he mused, stepping over the corpse. As he reached the compound's main level, he was struck by the sweet scent of fresh blood. It streaked the pale lobby floor and brushed the walls, rose from the bodies. Everywhere he looked, the living were at each other's throats. A man thrust a blade into another's gut, and a woman wrapped her hands around a young boy's neck. And Sloane moved among them like a ghost, unnoticed, their eyes fogged silver by the monster's hold. The shadow itself stood in the center of the lobby, growing solid as it fed on so much violence. And the Sunai, the FTF's only hope, were across the seam, attacking an empty tower. By the time they got here, it would be over. By the time they... The whistle of steel sang through the air, and Sloane turned just in time to dodge a blade as it slashed upward, slicing his shirt and grazing the skin beneath. He found himself face to face with a ghost. A ghost with a cloud of red curls and a ragged scar across her throat. Ilsa. The jeep rounded the compound and skidded to a halt, the rest of the convoy close behind. August and Sorrow lunged from the vehicle and onto the light strip. A back door stood ajar, propped open by the corpse of a soldier who'd obviously tried to escape and failed, a pattern of gunfire dappling his back. There was no time to tend the dead. August closed his eyes for an instant as he stepped over the body, and Sorrow's fingers tightened on their flute knife as they followed. Inside, the compound was in chaos. The power flickered, and in the unsteady light, August saw the corpses littering the hall, most of them in green and gray fatigues. An FTF was slumped on the ground, his back against the training hall doors, and August's chest lurched when he recognized warm brown eyes and an open face. Colin was bleeding. He couldn't tell where, but when he stepped closer, the boy's head drifted up, and he actually smiled.
"They're safe," he said. "I got the doors closed before," he coughed, before they saw,
he trailed off, eyes drifting shut. And August went to check for a pulse, but Sorrow's hand was already on his shoulder, urging him up. They had to keep moving. Every second was a life. And he straightened just as a voice reached him from the lobby. A voice that reminded him of fevers and cold steel and falling. But it wasn't just the Maokai's voice. It was the single word he said.
Ilsa.
August turned to Sorrow.
Get to the command center, he said. Hit the intercom and start playing.
Understanding lit the Sunai's eyes and they took off toward the stairs as August sprinted for the lobby and his sister... and Sloane. Chapter 13. You got blood on my clothes, said Kate as she took in the room, trying to carve a mental path. The Maokai looked down at her shirt.
I wonder who that was.
She smiled, flashing teeth.
You know what I keep asking myself?
Kate cheated a step to the side, within reach of the sofa. Why, your hair isn't as good as mine? Alice's red eyes narrowed.
What it will feel like to take your life.
The Maokai crouched, setting the detonator upright on the floor.
There's a beauty in it, don't you think? A kind of poetry. What happens when the effect kills the cause?
She straightened.
I've spent the last 6 months watching Sloane kill you. Wondering if I would enjoy it half as much. I think I will.
Kate's grip tightened on the spike as the shadow in her head longed to be let in, to be let out. Are you done? Alice pouted.
Not one for talking, are you? All right, then.
She lunged, so fast she seemed to blur, to disappear.
But Kate was already moving too, cutting sideways. She got one foot up on the couch and pushed off, driving her spike down into the blurring shape beneath her. An instant too late. The weapon scraped against the floor and Kate rolled and came up, twisting just in time to block Alice's shoe as it slammed into her front. Pain exploded down her arm as the blow connected, and the spike went skidding across the floor. Kate gasped and drew the second spike as she tried to swerve out of the Maokai's path, but Alice was already there. Nails raked across Kate's face, fine lines of blood welling on her cheek. Alice smiled at the red on her fingers.
"You don't honestly think you're a match for me," she said, flicking the blood away. "I am you, but better, Kate. You don't stand a chance."
Kate shifted her grip on the spike. "You're probably right." She ran a hand through her hair, pushing the bangs out of her face, the silver cracks on full display. Alice's eyes flickered with surprise, then suspicion, and it was Kate's turn to smile.
"So it's a good thing," she said, "that I'm not entirely myself anymore."
Ever since that moment in Prosperity, she'd wanted to fight, to hurt, to kill, and she'd resisted and resisted and resisted, had run from the shadow, knowing it was only a matter of time before it caught her. And now, at last, she could stop running. All she had to do was let the darkness in. All she had to do was let the monster out. And so, she did. Kate's resistance crumbled and the world went quiet as the shadow stole over her. There was no fear here. There was nothing but this room, this moment. The iron singing in her hands, the monster in her way. Alice's eyes narrowed as if she could see the changing Kate.
"What are you?"
she snarled. And Kate laughed.
"I'm not sure," she said. "Let's find out."
August reached the lobby just in time to see Sloane slam Ilsa back into the far wall, a knife tumbling from her fingers. Her hair was matted with sweat, the collar of her shirt torn, exposing a swath of stars along her shoulder. Sloane kicked the knife away and leaned in close.
"What's that?" he hissed. "I can't hear you."
"Sloane!" shouted August, and the monster sighed and let Ilsa drop to the ground.
"August," crooned the Maokai. "It's been so long."
The last time he'd faced Sloane, August had been starving, feverish, edging toward mortal, strung up in a warehouse and beaten to the point of turning. But he had changed. He was still changing. Sloane swept a hand over the chaos.
"Have you met my pet?"
The compound was a battlefield. Soldiers wrestled on the blood-slick floor, trapped in their violent spell.
"Hurry, Sorrow,"
he thought. Many of the soldiers were still alive, but they were killing one another. And there, in the center of the lobby, still as the eye of a storm, stood the Chaos Eater. Its head tipped back and its arms wide as if to receive them all. As August watched, he felt it again, that horrible hollow space like hunger in his chest. He forced his gaze back to Sloane.
"Still holding on to that human shell, I see."
The Maokai clicked his tongue.
"Leo would have faced me in his true form. Monster to monster. One on one."
"I'm not Leo," said August. "And it's not one on one."
Ilsa was on her feet, and the air around her had gone ice cold. He had seen his sister lost and kind and dreaming, but he had never seen her angry. Until now. She had the knife in her hand, and he had the bow in his, and Sloane must have sensed the scales tipping because he took a single step back, but was blocked by the body of a fallen cadet. And in that instant of imbalance, August and Ilsa struck. Sloane had to choose, and he chose August. But as the Maokai knocked away the bow, Ilsa moved behind him with a dancer's grace and slid her knife along the back of his knees. The Maokai snarled and staggered, one leg threatening to fold, but August caught him by the collar. Sloan slashed at August's eyes and leaped back, but Ilsa was there. She kicked out his other leg, and his knees hit the floor. She brought her knife to Sloan's throat as August fetched up his fallen bow. The Maokai bared his teeth.
"Tell me, August, where is Catherine? Surely you didn't leave her with Alice."
"Shut up," Sloan laughed.
"She doesn't stand a chance."
Surprise flickered across Ilsa's face, and her grip must have loosened because Sloan lunged to his feet in a last desperate attempt at freedom. Ilsa's knife carved a shallow line along his throat, and August stepped into the Maokai's path.
"You're wrong,"
snarled August, driving the steel bow straight up into Sloane's heart. The Maokai swayed on his feet, but unlike Leo, August hadn't missed. And a moment later, Sloan fell, his red eyes widening for an instant before their light went out. Chapter 14.
It stands at the center of a sun, burning brighter and brighter with every stolen life.
Kate dived for the knife block. Her fingers skimmed the nearest handle before Alice swept the whole thing off the counter. The knives came free, skittering across the kitchen floor, and Kate rolled, taking one as Alice grabbed another.
"How does it feel?" asked Alice, twirling the blade. "To know that I'm only here because of you."
The knife came sailing through the air, and Kate narrowly dodged, the blade burying itself in the cabinets. She tried to drive her own knife into Alice's side, but the Maokai had the block in her hands now, and she caught the blade's tip in the wood, ripping it from Kate's grip before slamming the block itself into her ribs. Pain splintered across her chest, there and then gone, a burst of light quickly swallowed up by the shadow. She swept up a cleaver, blood singing.
"To know that all the people I've killed, and I've killed a lot of people," added Alice with manic glee, "are dead because of you."
The words were meant to hurt.
"That everything I do, I get to do because of you."
But Kate felt nothing.
"Can you feel it?" goaded Alice. "When I kill them?"
Nothing but the cool weight of the weapons in her hands.
"Does it send a shiver through you?"
"Do you ever shut up?" said Kate, fainting with the knife and then driving the spike down into Alice's hand, pinning her to the kitchen counter. Alice let out a snarl of pain, but even as Kate moved to cut the Maokai's throat, Alice tore free. They collided again and again, came apart again and again, until blood dotted the floor, red and black, dripped from hands and jaws like sweat. Alice laughed and Kate growled, and they crashed together.
"Every scream like thread, like muscle, drawing it together until at last."
August pulled the bow free and let Sloane's body, what was left of it, collapse to the floor, just as Ilsa drew in a sharp breath. It was the closest thing to a sound she'd made in months, and August turned, following her gaze. The Chaos Eater was still there, but it was no longer a silver-eyed shadow. It was a thing of flesh and bone. August could hear lungs filling with air, and something like a heart beating in the hollow of its chest as a mouth carved its way across its face, and the lips split into a smile, and the smile parted to reveal a voice, and...
"I... am real."
Its voice tore through August like a storm, forcing its way through his head, his chest. It stoked the coal that burned at his core, the darkness waiting to be released, and August clutched at his heart as it flared, the tallies on his skin glowing red. He fought and lost and began to fall toward that darker self. Away from his body. Away from... Music poured through the speakers,
The steady notes of Sorrow's song spilled across the lobby. They washed over August like a balm, putting out the fire before it spread. He struggled up to his hands and knees and saw Ilsa folded on the floor nearby, the light fading from her stars as the fever left her. To every side, the fighting stopped. Weapons slid from fingers, and hands fell away from skin, and assaults dissolved into tableaus before collapsing entirely. Light rose to the surface of skin, white at first, and then streaked with red, the crimson glow bleeding through the edges of their souls, staining each and every one. The music couldn't resurrect the dead, but every living soul went calm, enveloped by the Sunai spell. Only the Chaos Eater moved. It shuddered and twitched, struggling to hold its shape, trying to open a mouth that dissolved and reappeared and dissolved again, sealing its voice away. But as it strained against the music, it began to win. Its edges hardened, and the line of its mouth grew firm, and August knew there wasn't much time. The air around the monster cracked and split, dark lines thrown out like shards, the absence of a soul, cold and empty. August rose to his feet, forcing himself forward. He had reaped Amalkai's soul, and it had nearly killed him. He had reaped his brother's, and it still fought inside him. And as his fingers brushed the nearest shard, he wondered what would become of... Something darted past him, quick as air. A cloud of curls and a cluster of stars swallowed up by smoke as Ilsa transformed. Between one step and the next, she disappeared, replaced by a Sunai with curved horns and burning wings. A blue light, like the very center of a flame, glowed through Ilsa's skin as she threw her arms around the Chaos Eater, and the room exploded in silver and shadow. Two forces colliding in a way that shook the world. August staggered, shielding his eyes. When he looked again, the Chaos Eater was gone, and Ilsa stood alone in the center of the lobby floor.
"Our sister has two sides," Leo had said. "They never meet."
August had always imagined Ilsa's true form as the opposite of her human one, cruel where she was kind. But as he stared into the Sunai's black eyes, all he saw was his sister. And as he watched, the smoke withdrew and her wings burned away, horns returning to red curls. But her skin, which should have been smooth and starless, was cracking. Dark lines like deep fissures started on her hands and spread, up her arms and over her shoulders and across her face. Ilsa looked up at August, and he saw the sadness in his sister's eyes right before she broke apart and shattered on the floor. Chapter 15. Kate stumbled, her vision suddenly blurring, and when it came back into focus, the world was heavy and dull, the sharpness lost. Her limbs trembled and her body ached, and the shadow in her head was gone. And Alice was on her. The Maokai caught Kate by the throat and slammed her back into the floor-to-ceiling windows. The glass cracked against her spine, the splinters spreading dangerously.
"What's the matter?" taunted Alice. "Losing steam?"
Instead of trying to break free, Kate grabbed her by the collar and twisted hard, tipping the Maokai off balance. It bought her only an instant, just enough time to draw a breath and put what was left of the coffee table, a pile of shattered glass and broken wood, between them. Alice stepped over it with exaggerated care, and Kate retreated one pace and then another. She was running away, and Alice knew it. Her mind reeled as she tried to piece together a plan with the last of her strength. A knife, slick with blood, sat on the counter. Alice tisked.
"Boring."
But Kate lunged for it. She almost made it.
Her fingers skimmed the metal before Alice caught her leg, nails sinking deep into her calf. Kate gasped in pain, an animal sound that seemed to stoke the Maokai's bloodlust as she dragged her down to the floor. Kate twisted, rolling onto her back and swinging her boot across Alice's face. The Maokai recoiled, and Kate scrambled up. She tried to ignore the blood running into her eyes, tried to ignore the mounting pain, tried to ignore everything but Alice's red eyes glowing in the low light. She flexed her fingers, too aware that her hands were empty. Halfway between them, an iron spike glinted on the floor, and Alice grinned, daring her to try to get there first. Kate knew she wouldn't. She was too slow without the monster in her head, and she was losing blood, losing strength, losing. "I give up," she said. "You win." The words caught Alice by surprise, which was exactly what Kate needed. She dove for the weapon. Alice moved a second later, but Kate's hand had already closed around the spike, and she turned, meeting the monster as the monster met her. Kate drove the spike up into Alice's heart, and Alice drove her hand into Kate's chest. Chapter 16. August sank to his knees on the lobby floor. There was nothing left of Ilsa. Nothing but a small white pile of dust and a world of red. And he heard himself say her name over and over until the word lost meaning. Until his voice faltered and broke. He reached out and drew his fingers through the ash. Then he forced his hand to his comm, forced the words from his throat, forced his body to its feet as the music stopped playing and sorrow reappeared, dark eyes going wide at the sight of so many stained souls. And moments later, the night squads poured in, and the living returned to themselves, and the compound plunged into shock and sorrow and noise. August started to retreat, and felt something crack beneath his heel. An abandoned tablet. He knelt to retrieve it and saw it was still transmitting from the penthouse. The screen was dark and the shot was empty. There was no sign of Alice. No sign of Kate. No sign of life at all. The tablet fell from his fingers. He ran. The elevator doors opened and August sprinted into the Harker penthouse. It was a mess of toppled furniture and broken glass, weapons glinting, and one window a violent spiderweb of cracks. Blood slicked almost every surface, some of it red and some of it black. And a mound of ash and gore was heaped on the floor, and he barely noticed any of it, because all he saw was Kate. Kate, sitting in the darkness, at the kitchen counter, one arm in her lap and the other resting on the countertop, fingers wrapped around her iron spike. She looked up when August came in. The silver was gone from her eyes, replaced by that steady blue, made bluer by the blood on her face. "Did we win?" she asked. A sound escaped his throat, half laugh, half sob, because he didn't know how to answer. It seemed so wrong to call it winning when so many were dead. When Ilsa was ash, and Henry was dying, and the compound was awash in red. But the Chaos Eater was gone, and Sloane was dead, and so he said, "Yes." Kate let out a trembling breath and closed her eyes. "Good." She let the spike roll from her fingers, and he frowned at the sight of her palm, coated with blood. It dripped to the floor beneath her stool. "You need a medic." But Kate only shot him a tired smile. "I'm tougher than I look," she said. "I just want to go." She pushed herself upright, the shadow of pain crossing her face as she started toward him. She never made it. August was already there when her legs gave way, and he caught her, sinking with her to the floor. and even in the low light, he could see the blood staining the front of her shirt, the way it had when they'd been trapped in the subway car, when the lights had come on and the world had gone from black and white to vicious red.
"Stay with me,"
he said. They were her words once, said when he was sick, when he was on fire, when she took his burning hand and dragged him to his feet, and he got up, and he held on, and so she had to now.
"Stay with me, Kate."
"Do they stay with you?"
she murmured, and August didn't know what she meant, because all he could see, all he could think of, was the blood. There was so much of it. It soaked through her clothes from a jagged, too dark tear in her shirt. But when August pressed his hands to the wound, Kate shuddered, red light rising on her skin.
"No."
He tried to pull away, but Kate caught his hand, holding it in place.
"Kate, please, let me..."
"The souls you take..."
Her fingers tightened on his.
"Do they stay?"
And he knew what she was asking, and he knew why, but he didn't know how to answer. He thought of Leo, his brother's voice in his head, thought of all the other voices he never heard.
"I don't know, Kate,"
his voice trembled.
"I don't know."
"Sometimes," she said through gritted teeth, "I wish you could lie."
"I'm sorry."
Tears were running down his face.
"I'm not."
Kate pressed her hand down over his, and he bowed his head, trying to put pressure on the wound even as the red light grew brighter and began to pour through his skin. He didn't want it, didn't want anything except to give it back, to hold her together the way she'd held him. But he couldn't. He didn't know how. He closed his eyes as the light of Kate's soul flowed through him, strong and bright.
"I don't know,"
he whispered.
"I don't know if the souls stay with me, but I hope they do."
There was no answer. August opened his eyes.
"Kate."
But the room was dark and quiet, and she was gone. Elegy. He found Allegro pawing at Ilsa's door. It had been 3 days, and the cat still didn't seem to realize his sister was gone. August knelt down.
"No."
He reached out gingerly to pet the cat.
"I miss her too."
Allegro looked at him with sad green eyes before climbing into his arms and nuzzling beneath his chin. August had clearly been forgiven. He carried the cat into his own room and set him on the bed beside Kate's tablet. The rest of her things, the iron spikes, the silver lighter, lay in a bag beneath the bed. But it was the tablet he kept returning to. It wasn't locked, and when he first booted the screen, he'd found an inbox filled with unsent messages. Half-form notes to people August had never met. People Kate would never see again. Kate. The name echoed through him like a single pluck string. There was no voice in his head. No way to know if she was with him. No way to know, but he could hope. August sank onto the edge of the bed, the tablet in his hands, scrolling through the messages until he found the one from Ilsa. The one that read only, "August." His chest ached. He missed them both, in different ways. Marveled, even through the pain, at how different people left such different holes. Someone knocked, and August looked up and saw Henry standing in the doorway, one hand braced against the frame. He moved like he was made of glass, expecting with every step to break. But he had not broken yet.
"It's time," said Henry.
August nodded and rose to his feet. The FTFs gathered at the base of the seam, black bands circling their sleeves, a marker of the dead. They were standing before the central gate,
Henry leaning on Emily, the council beside them. Henry said it was important for the FTFs to see the faces of the future as well as those of the past. August stood at Henry's side and Sorrow at his, Ilsa's absence marked by a space between them. August's violin hung from his fingers. They wanted to play for the bodies on the wall, for the dead and for the lost, for Ilsa and for Kate, and for everyone stolen by monstrous acts. But he would wait until the service was over and the sun went down, and if the living wanted to listen, to lose themselves for a moment in the music, they were welcome to. But for now, no one spoke, no speeches were made, and that was all right. Mourning was its own kind of music, the sound of so many hearts, of so many breaths, of so many standing together. The crowd stretched from the seam to the compound, a sea of faces turned up toward the wall where the bodies were laid out, 298 members of the FTF wrapped in black, like tallies. It was a warm day for early spring, the sun cutting through the clouds, and August had his sleeves rolled up, his own tally scrawled across his skin.
187.
He wouldn't lose count again. Colin stood near the front of the crowd. Despite his injuries, he still wanted to join the night squad. He had always been full of stubborn hope. Stubborn hope. That's how he put it. August liked the phrase. Kate would probably say that she was the stubborn and he was the hope, and he didn't know if she'd be right, but he held on to that idea, to hope, as Henry bowed his head, and so did August and Sorrow and Emily and the council and the crowd. The gesture spreading row by row as the soldiers on the seam lit the fire, and the bodies on the wall began to burn. August stood on the roof of the compound as the sun sank and the fire died to embers on the seam. Steps sounded behind him, and a moment later he sensed Sorrow's arrival, their presence a thing solid enough to lean against. Even now, he was amazed by the weight of their will, the steadiness of their resolve, unwavering in a way he'd never known. August was full of questions, of doubts, of wants and hopes, fears and flaws. He did not know if they were weaknesses or strengths, only that he didn't want to live without them. For a long time they stood in silence, but for once, Sorrow was the one to break it. "I saw their souls," said the Sunai. "All those humans, streaked with red. How are we supposed to judge them now?" August looked their way.
"Maybe we aren't."
He expected a fight, but Sorrow went quiet again, twirling their flute knife between their fingers as they looked out at the jagged skyline, and August followed their gaze past the seam and the smoke to the northern side of the city. Once, in his first month, August had dropped an empty glass jar. It had slipped through his fingers and shattered on the kitchen floor, throwing 100 shards, some big enough to cup in his palm and others like flecks of dust. Impossible to see unless they caught the light. It had taken a maddening amount of time to retrieve all the pieces, and even when he thought the task was done, he would still catch the glint of glass hours, days, weeks later. The monsters of Verity were like that jar. Sloane and Alice, the two largest shards, were gone, but so many smaller pieces remained. The Corsi, they could only hope to starve with time and light, while some of the Malkai had fled into the waste, and the rest were scattering across the city, determined to survive. The Fangs were largely gone, but any stragglers would find themselves prey, to monsters or to him. The whole city glinted in the aftermath, the shards thrown wide, and August didn't know how long it would take to find them all, to take them up and make Verity safe again. As for the humans, they were still divided, by anger and loss, fear and hope. Progress was being made, but August was coming to realize that there would always be cracks in the surface, shadows in the light, 100 degrees of grays between black and white. People were messy,
They were defined not only by what they'd done, but by what they would have done under different circumstances, molded as much by their regrets as their actions. Choices they stood by and those they wish they could undo. Of course, there was no going back. Time only moved forward. But people could change. For worse. And for better. It wasn't easy. The world was complicated. Life was hard. And so often, living hurt. So make it worth the pain. Kate's voice whispered through him, sudden and welcome, and he drew a deep breath. Darkness was sweeping over the city, and there was still so much work to be done. "Are you ready, brother?" asked Sorrow. And August lifted his violin and stepped to the edge of the roof.
"I am."
This is Therese Plummer. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Our Dark Duet, a Monsters of Verity novel. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2017 by Victoria Schwab. Production copyright 2017 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.